It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hoo-ah! Welcome to Money for Lunch. It's good to have you here. You know, I have been working on my annual I'm working on my annual get-together with Arnold Schwarzenegger coming up the first week in March. So if you happen to be in Columbus, Ohio, drop me a line. Maybe we can grab a picture together or some coffee or Coke or whatever, maybe a glass of water. But Columbus, Ohio, first week of March, Arnold Schwarzenegger and I are going to be hanging out together. Arnold, a lot of people don't know this, but for over, I think it's over 30 years or very close to 30 years, Arnold puts on this thing called the Arnold Sports Festival out in Columbus, Ohio, of all places. And I will tell the story why he chose Columbus, Ohio at another time. But it's outstanding. 18,000 competitors come out there. 50-plus events. It's bigger than the Olympics. 250,000 people show up to watch and support. So it's an outstanding event. And if you want to come out and support Schwarzenegger's charity, it's called the After School All-Stars, hit me up and I'll give you the details. But we're going to be doing some stuff, raising some money, elevating some brands, and having fun with, you know, having fun the way the Terminator knows how to have fun. So Lou Ferrigno is going to be there. And so this is a private event and it's a lot of fun. Herschel Walker is going to be there. Who else is going to be there? Randy Couture. So if you want to meet Arnold and you want to meet Randy Couture, those are like two out of the five or six expendables. Anyway, hit me up and I'll send you the details and maybe you can make it happen and support a good cause, elevate your brand, have some fun. It's a wild, wild time. We do all sorts of manly things. Your wife is more than welcome to come if you have a wife. If not, bring a girlfriend, but don't bring both. Ba-dum-tsh. All right, well, you know, just looking out for your best interest. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, oh, and it's tax deductible. So you get to have fun and it's tax deductible. Come on, it doesn't get much better than that. All right, so come out, support a good cause, have fun, take some pictures, make things happen. And, you know, speaking of supporting a worthwhile cause, right, my first guest, Tim Hayde, he supported the United States Air Force. See how I kind of segued into that? See how I did that? It's something that you learn in the entertainment field. Anyway, Tim Hayde is a former United States Air Force officer and now helps companies understand their energy consumption, especially those involved with indoor agriculture cultivation, an industry that is estimated to use, check this out, 5% of the nation's total energy supply. Tim and his partners design microgrids that provide tremendous energy savings, a lower carbon footprint, sustainability, and substantial cost benefits. United States Air Force officer retired Tim Hayde, welcome to Money for Lunch.
How are you, Bert? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing good. It's good to have you here. The first thing I want to say is thank you so much for serving our country. And, you know, it's one thing to serve our country. It's another completely different thing to get yourself to be an officer when you're serving our country. So thank you for both of those.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure, and there are a lot of men and women out there who've done a lot more than I have. So, I think it's always a good thing to just think about the troops that have been and are currently in harm's way. We owe them a lot, and I don't think we think about it enough. So, I echo those thoughts to thank you to all the men and women out there who are doing the hard work today.
Sure, absolutely. All right, well, let's get into this, because what's interesting here, if I understand it correctly, a year ago, you and your partners were all working for large, established energy companies. And so give us your backstory. How did you go from, working to CEOing your own energy company? Talk about this.
Yeah, so it's a very roundabout story, but to sort of simplify it, what my co-founders and I got really interested in a technology called microgrids, which is essentially just an on-site power plant. So instead of having a central power plant, a bunch of transmission lines to produce electricity, you just have a power plant on-site. And we got really passionate about this because
gotcha.
It's our thesis that this is a big part of the solution to the climate change challenge that the global community faces. But when we talk about solving climate change, there's kind of three factors. One is reducing our carbon footprint, and we kind of know how to do that now. But the second thing is improving resiliency of our energy systems, and we're struggling with that. But then the third thing is doing so in a financially viable way. And we really have no idea how to do that. And so
right.
What we see the potential for microgrids is not just the opportunity to reduce carbon, although that's certainly an important benefit, but to improve resiliency and do so in an economically viable way in an all-in-one package. And that's why we really got interested in it. You mentioned that what our company focuses on right now is indoor agriculture. And that was really sort of the thing that came along that facilitated this jump was we saw the indoor agriculture market and the potential there. And our technology that we know how to build and have expertise in is a really good fit in that market. So those were kind of the factors that led us to saying, all right, we're going to start a company to help the indoor agriculture market produce products in a more sustainable, resilient, and cost-effective manner.
Sure. All right, so walk me through it. I mean, because first of all, I'm blown away by these numbers. 5% of the nation's total energy supply is consumed by these indoor agricultures. So what does these microgrids do for the planet, do for the industry? Why is these microgrids important to these indoor agricultural companies?
Yeah, so like you said, one of the things that people don't really, I think, have an appreciation for is what's happening in the agriculture sector overall. And there's this big push towards locally grown indoor produced agriculture of all means, right? From tomatoes to leafy greens, sort of the entire spectrum. Really, that business is a resource business. So if you can produce the fruit or vegetable that you're producing using less energy, then you're going to be able to compete with sort of traditional products. If you can't conserve energy, then, the traditional, import-export market for growing fruits and vegetables is going to beat you on price. And so that's really the opportunity is, you have a bunch of these indoor greenhouses and grow houses that are standing up, and they need to be really smart about their energy in order to sell their product on the market. And so how these microgrids do that is essentially we use less fuel to produce the same amount of electricity. And we do that in two primary ways. One is by using renewable energy assets to the maximum extent possible. Typically, we work with solar panels, so rooftop solar is a core component of almost all of our systems. And then the second component that is really a driver of value is a technology called code generation, which is a technology that's been around for about 100 years. It sort of operates in the background, and people don't talk about it a lot. But essentially, when you generate electricity with any fossil fuel, be it coal, natural gas, or oil, about 35% of the potential energy that you put into your prime mover comes out in the form of electricity, and the other 65% is expelled in the form of heat. And so that's why when you drive by a big power plant, you see, you know, a huge stack with a bunch of steam coming out of it, because when you have a central power plant, you can't really do anything with that heat. But when you're generating that electricity on site, you can use that heat to offset the thermal load of the facility. So one of the keys to the indoor agriculture market is you have to keep the temperature inside the facility very, very consistent. And that becomes tricky to do when you're balancing, you know, lighting loads and HVAC loads and things of that nature. So what we actually do is we just use the natural gas that would be used at a central power plant much more efficiently by creating electricity and then recycling the waste heat and using that for climate control purposes inside the facility. And that's sort of the foundation of our value proposition.
Gotcha, gotcha. Interesting. All right, all right. So I guess let me ask you this. You guys have been doing this now for a year. So let's talk a little nuts and bolts about business. So right now, you are targeting these indoor agriculture companies. What are some of your hurdles when you are marketing to your ideal clients?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of there's a bunch of factors, and you know, one of the things that I guess maybe we didn't anticipate, but it sort of just happened, is we've in essence sort of become ambassadors for the indoor agriculture industry, because I think the biggest barrier we face is just perception of the industry overall. So you know, when you go talk to people and you say indoor agriculture is gonna be a massive industry and consume 5% of, the U.S. electricity, that doesn't necessarily make sense at face value to a lot of people we talk to. While we originally entered this space saying, indoor agriculture growth is a given, and we're just sort of an auxiliary service provider that can play in that space, I think the biggest surprise for us has been, we've kind of had to become part of the indoor agriculture industry and do a lot more work, do a lot more listening than we have talking to sort of understand the parameters of this industry so that we can, be ambassadors on the back end. And in some ways that's been a surprise, but it's been a very pleasant surprise because we've met a lot of really great innovative people in the space who are really looking to do some great stuff and have a good handle on this. So I think that's the thing that maybe we didn't anticipate that has sort of come to fruition. But it's also, still a barrier for people because I think, it doesn't necessarily make sense when you say, I live in New York City and trying to convince someone that I can grow a tomato in a, old warehouse in Newark, New Jersey for the same price that, somebody can grow a tomato outside in California and ship it across the country. You have to sort of get into details before people start believing that story.
Right, right. But you know what's interesting is, again, this is a common thing when you are sorry about that. I had to hit the cough button as I'm getting over my cold. So that's why that dead air, everybody. So anyway, what I was going to say is I'm glad you said this because this is a common thread, a common occurrence in marketing any business. No matter the value proposition, you come across skeptics. You come across some form of rejection, apprehension, hesitation, resistance, right?
Absolutely. It's we expected a lot of barriers, and certainly, some of our anticipation, we were correct in some ways and we weren't in others. But I think that was something that we really thought about a lot before we decided to make the jump and become entrepreneurs and start our own company. was making sure to be very honest with ourselves about the challenges we faced and the fact that this was going to be a roller coaster ride. You know, whether we were ultimately successful or not, there were definitely going to be ups and downs. And, you know, I can tell you, I think the biggest, you know, thing that I've learned through this experience to date is the importance of surrounding yourself with really good people. You know, we've built out a great team, and, you know, my co-founders especially are, you know, kind of all there for me when I have those bad days, and I'm there for them when they have their bad days. And so far we've avoided, you know, a day where everyone's feeling bad at the same time. But, you know, I really think that's the key. It's just, you know, having good people who can sort of pick you up, because, you know, certainly any, you know, entrepreneurial venture, especially one in a new market that people don't necessarily understand, is going to be a bumpy road.
Sure. Sure. All right. So let me ask you this, and then I want to circle back to your industry, but
sure.
As a startup, what have been some of the biggest challenges that you've encountered so far?
Yeah, you know, so I think there are some challenges that are unique to clean tech in general that, you know, are more systemic problems that we haven't really, we certainly haven't figured out the answer to, but I don't really think anyone has. And the biggest problem is that, you know, when we talk about energy infrastructure, we need innovation that comes from, you know, startups and small businesses if we're going to, you know, solve these challenges. And, you know, independent of climate change, when you look at, you know, the national security implications of our, you know, existing energy infrastructure, when you look at the economic consequences of not upgrading our existing energy infrastructure, I mean, we need to do it. And so we need, you know, companies that are entering the space and innovating and doing new things. And, you know, just to be frank, the people who manage our current grid, utility companies, are mostly wonderful organizations, but innovation isn't really their thing.
Right.
And so you're going to need this sort of, you know, small businesses to come in and do a lot of the new stuff that's going on. Now, the problem is that, you know, energy is a capitally intense business. It's not software. It's, you know, big, expensive hardware. And so when you start looking at, well, how do you fund these ideas and how do you fund this innovation, it's not really something that the venture capital industry right now is set up to do. So, you know, you have a lot of venture capitalists who are, you know, really have a really good model for determining, you know, the next great app or the next great piece of software. But that model doesn't necessarily work when you're talking about, you know, a big hardware company. And so that's probably been our biggest challenge is just trying to explain, or A, trying to find people who are interested from an investment perspective, but then B, trying to explain how that works. And our, you know, our solution to this problem has been, you know, a little bit of explaining and a little bit of modifying our business plan to try to, you know, meet investors halfway. And so, you know, we spent a lot of time designing a business model to give you an idea that, you know, we believe has a quicker route to profitability than just doing, you know, a clean tech startup and focusing solely on the technology. And that's really where the indoor agriculture piece came in. But you know, it is a challenge. And I think, you know, there's certain initiatives now, Bill Gates and started something called Breakthrough Energy Ventures that's focused on investing solely in clean tech solutions. And there's some other interesting programs that are out there. But, you know, that's really, I think, a gap in just the investment landscape right now. And again, you know, it makes getting these companies off the ground, you know, a lot more challenging than even getting a, you know, normal entrepreneurial opportunity off the ground. And that in and of itself is pretty challenging. So, you know, it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's go back to your industry, and I want to ask you this. I want you to maybe give me your thoughts, your estimation. How large is the opportunity for your industry, for your clean technology? Talk about some of these numbers.
Yeah, so there's a lot of moving parts, and because this is a new industry, you kind of see forecasts all over the place. But, if you kind of look at the consensus of industry analysts, by 2020, you're looking at, indoor agriculture being, somewhere in the neighborhood of $40 to $50 billion a year in annual revenue. And then if you sort of back that out and you look at the clean technology opportunities specific to that, you're somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 to $12 billion in an annual revenue basis for clean technology companies who come in and help these organizations reduce their energy footprint and, produce more product at a lower cost. And that's really the thing that excites us about getting involved in this is, those bumps in the road are worth it, assuming that, in 5 years, this opportunity is as big as people expect it to be. And we've done a lot of research on that and are pretty confident that those numbers are about right. So it's a really big opportunity, and I think it's something that's kind of flying under the radar that a lot of people could potentially look at from an investment perspective or from a career transition perspective, because it's a new market, but it's big and it's growing quickly.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you what's exciting about this, and something that you mentioned about innovation, that a lot of sectors, because they're busy running their businesses, aren't able to innovate. Innovation is sometimes not part of necessarily building a business. It's not like you write out a business plan and say, hey, and by year two we're going to innovate. It's just not the way it happens. But innovation is what disrupts a market. It's what makes leaps and bounds possible. And so you're coming in, you're stepping up, and you're putting down this bet that you guys can come in with these microgrids and really innovate the current status quo. And you guys could disrupt everything. You guys could change the way this stuff is done, bring down these costs. And when you're looking at an industry that's sucking up 50% of the nation's total energy supply, that's a pretty big number.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and that's really the thing that I think is the most important criteria that we looked for when we were trying to figure out how to proceed was to sort of put it quickly, a product market fit, right? And so.
Right.
When we're, microgrid technology is applicable to a bunch of different industries, right? The number one opportunity historically has been in hospitals. But when you look at a hospital, and I've done some hospital projects, I've looked at a lot of hospital projects, but when you do a hospital project, your counterparty in that transaction is typically an executive from the hospital. And then you start looking at it from his perspective, and energy costs for a hospital are somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 4% of their operating budget. So they might really love, the technology we're proposing. They might really want to do something, to make the hospital greener or more resilient. But at the end of the day, they have a fiduciary responsibility in most cases to their organization to spend their time in a profitable way. And so, when you look at the time commitment that executives need to put in to vetting one of these deals, and, there's not a lot of precedent, so really understanding the technology and the benefits and the risks, that's really the biggest barrier to how this happens in traditional industries. And that's what really excites us about the indoor agriculture space, because in indoor agriculture, energy is not 2 to 4% of your operating budget. It's 20 to 40% of your operating budget. And so, when you have an executive who's 40% of his operating budget is energy costs, that guy's willing to put the time in to really understand the best solution. And that's exactly what we look for in a counterparty and what we found in this industry. It's just a bunch of people who, you know, this is a core competency of their business, and they're willing to spend some time to get it right. And that really excites us.
I love it. I love it. Tim, we're out of time. Good to have you on the show. I'd love to bring you back in a few months, get an update on what's happening with your industry, with your company, and what do you call it? It's called Scale Energy Solutions.
Yeah, that's correct. And it's a pleasure to be here, Bert. Thank you so much for having me, and have fun with Arnold and Herschel Walker and Randy Couture in Columbus.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Tim Haight, everybody. Former United States Air Force officer. Now he helps companies understand their energy consumption, and wish him the best of luck. Looking forward to talking with him again. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. You know, grateful for commercial breaks every now and then because you were not able to hear me cough, so that's a good thing. My next guest, Simone Millicis, is the founder and creator of Joy of Business, as well as the worldwide coordinator of Access Consciousness, which operates in over 170 countries. Simone is the author of the internationally acclaimed book, Joy of Business, currently available in 11 languages, and just released her new book, Getting Out of Debt Joyfully. And it's available, both these books are available on Amazon or wherever good books are sold. Simone Millicis, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, Bert. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know what? I haven't read Get Out of Debt Joyfully, but that really should be a book that everybody reads, because when you're out of debt, there is a certain stress that's lifted off of you, and there's a certain peace of mind, and that is something worth celebrating.
Yeah, totally. And the funny thing is, though, Bert, the book is not just about getting out of debt. It's also about creating more wealth, because so many people don't look at creating something more in their life. It's like they become complacent with what they have, or it's a familiarity that they have about what they create around money. And it's such a taboo subject, and it should be a fun subject. So, yeah, and I was extremely in debt, so getting out of debt joyfully, and I used a bunch of tools and changed it. So I'd like the world to get that no one needs to have a money problem.
Yeah, I love that so much. Nobody needs to have a money problem. I always like to say that money problems, for the most part, money problems are custom made. Everybody has their own unique one, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, man, that is so funny. Yeah. All right, so we may have to bring you back and talk about getting out of debt joyfully, because it sounds like that's a valuable conversation as well. All right, so your latest book, Joy of Business and Wealth. No, it's Joy of Business, right? That's the book, Joy of
Business. Yes.
Okay. And that was your first book. And Getting Out of Debt Joyfully is your second book.
That's correct.
All right. So let's talk about this. Here you are. You're the founder, creator of Joy of Business. So what does the joy of business mean to you? Talk about that.
Okay. Well, Bert, I thought that everybody had a joy of business, and then I soon realized that that's not true. In this reality, it's like most people do business for different reasons. I always did it for the fun of it. So, and you know, as you said before, the book is translated into 11 languages. I can't tell you how many languages we have a problem with those three words, including English, joy of business, to be together to translate. So, because for me, it's it's not about, like, you know, laughing hysterically. It's like it's the ability to choose what you would like to choose, to, you know, take risks knowing that something might not show up the way you would like it to show up. But that's sort of the adventure of business. It's having fun with it every day. It's the willingness to lose everything, the willingness to have everything, because I see people make business so significant and make it something that they have to hold on to. It has to look a certain way, rather than being willing to receive the infinite possibilities from everywhere. And it's like you don't have to I'm from Australia, and I think it's very funny, when I went to America and I was traveling around, this is many years ago, when I was like 19, and everyone was like, oh my goodness, you didn't go to college. And in Australia, it's not really something that you would have to do. It's not like, now I can only get a job at McDonald's. It's like, you can be very successful, unless you want to be a doctor or a lawyer. But I know in America, it's so like, this is what you have to do to be successful. And it's like, no, what would you really love to do? What is that thing that you would love to do that you could create that you haven't been creating, and you think you have to be in another job? So it's really following the energy of what you would like to create in the world.
Yeah. You know, and there's so much there that I love about what you just said. First of all, the whole thing about going to college. College, like a lot of things, is a mechanism of marketing. You know, you don't have to go to college, and milk does not do the body good. That and other myths here on Money for Lunch. And so, you know, bottom line is, the reality is, you don't have to go to college. I know a lot of people, in fact, I want to say 80% of the people that have gone to college got a job, nothing related to their field that they went to college for, right? And
exactly.
There are tons of people. Bill Gates dropped out of college. Steve Jobs dropped out of college. So college isn't crucial. I think courage is probably more crucial than anything else. And I think that the most important things are not taught in college. For example, how to manage your goals, how to manage your relationships, how to manage your money. For the most part, those things are not necessarily taught in college, unless you specifically go, if you're there to get a finance degree or some kind of financial degree, I should say, that's a different story. But when you look at what makes people happy or unhappy, relationships, managing your goals, managing your emotions, and managing your money, you don't need a college degree for those things. You need courage.
No, you do. And you need to live. I mean, you know, one of the things that I like to look at too is choice creates awareness. So you're going to choose something. I mean, if you look at managing your relationships, it's like, choose a relationship and it's like, that one didn't work out so well. Okay, had a lot of awareness from that. Now what am I going to choose? And that's with everything, with finances, with business. I mean, I've been in so many different jobs, Bert, and everyone – I know that it was projected at me, that place of like, ooh, she can't settle down. She can't find something that's, you know, fulfilling for her. And I was like, are you kidding me? There's a whole world out there. I'm just trying to get as much experience as I possibly can. There's so many fun industries to play in here. But what's looked at is that you're not stable enough. Like the college thing in the US, it's like, you know, and I mean, I spoke to someone the other day who's in their 40s, mid-40s, and they've only just paid off their college loan. And I'm like, right. That's crazy to go to college and have that sort of loan, like, leaning over your head. It must impact your choices that you make with business and with creating money. And it's like, what if there was more freedom than that? What if there was more choice than that, more possibilities? What if we didn't have to, you know, confine ourselves to what this reality has projected as the rules and regulations for success? What success sort of mean to all of us? What if it was being happy, literally?
Being happy? Oh, Simone, stop.
I know.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's talk about this, because one of the things that I love that you mentioned in the book, The Joy of Business, you talk about money follows joy, not the reverse, which most people confuse, that joy follows money. So talk about this.
Yeah, oh, I've heard so many people, Bert, over the years, they lean on money to create their happiness, and it's not true. It's like they'll be like, and in their head, they're like, well, once I get this amount of money, or once I have this house, or once I have this, and they have this list of things that they think are going to bring them happiness, but it's not true. And it's like, you can just wake up happy. I once saw this, you remember Far Side cartoons? And there was
Who?
This guy coming out of a Far Side. It was a very famous cartoon.
Yeah,
I haven't seen him around for a long time.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And he's walking out of the shop, and he's got this big box, and underneath it says, Bob's friend said you couldn't buy it, but he found out where you could, and it's a shop called Happiness, and he's walking out with this big box. And that's what most people think occurs, is that you can actually buy happiness. But you can't. You wake up, and you can just be happy. You can just choose to be happy right now. And what I found is, most of the time, if you look at the people around you who are doing something they love, they end up making more money. They end up, money comes to them. It's like, I mean, one of the things I like to talk about in my seminars is, if you're going to have a party and you invite people to a party and you say, well, there's going to be no food, there's going to be, nothing to drink, there's going to be no music, and I'm probably going to abuse you when you walk in. It's like, are you going to come? But that's what we do to money all the time. Rather than have this adventure and this party and this occasion that you want to celebrate and be like, hey, you want to come to this party? Great food, great people, great wine, there's going to be awesome music, etc. Then people want to show up to that. Money is exactly the same thing. Money likes showing up to the party, like to the celebration, to the joy, not to that place of when you abuse it all the time. I mean, hardly anyone you see, if they earn $10, is grateful for $10. All they do is complain about what they didn't earn. And say that energy, that point of view, is not going to create more money. Whereas if every single time you even earn $1, it's like you look at it and you're absolutely grateful for the $1, you're grateful for you for creating it, and more will show up. It's just natural the way the energy flows like that. And money follows joy.
I love that. Money follows joy. You know what? And we've heard multiple people talk about follow your bliss and the money will come. And I think what happens and what confuses people is that that statement is incomplete. And this is what I've learned, and I want your comments, is that follow your bliss and the money will come, or in your case, follow your joy and the money will come eventually, right? That sometimes to follow your joy, and this is why it's important to follow your joy or your bliss, is because no matter what, you're going to have to work hard. So you might as well work hard at something you really enjoy doing, and maybe in a few years, 10 years, you will be rewarded handsomely for it. Mark Cuban says, do what you love to do, and maybe you can make a good living at it. And to me, that is a more accurate statement, because follow your bliss and the money will come almost makes it sound like it's going to be so easy. And the reality is, whether you're doing something you don't love to do or something that you do love doing, it's going to take time and hard work.
Yeah, I would agree with some of that.
Okay.
And I mean, the thing is, with the follow your bliss thing, and it has this, like, I want to say, with no offense, but like this hippie connotation of just like, now I'm just going to make, rum balls in the kitchen and money will show up. And it's like, no, you actually have to take some action. What action do you have to take today to create the business that you would like? So, and working hard, that's something that I'm like, ooh, because it's like, what if it was more working fun? Like, I work really long hours, but I never feel like that. I travel all over the world. I travel about 10 months of the year. I'm home like 2 months of the year. And everyone always says to me, when are you going to have a holiday? And I'm like, I feel like my life is a holiday. It's like every single day is like work and every single day is play. So that working hard mentality, I think that sometimes turns people off, because they're like, oh my goodness, maybe they've seen their father, work themselves to the grind or something, and they had a heart attack or whatever. And it's like, that energy, it's like if you're actually choosing to do something that you love, then it doesn't feel like working hard. And like I said before, it's like you really have to keep asking, okay, so what action can I take today? Because, I mean, there's this great story that a friend of mine, Gary Douglas, the founder of Access Consciousness Cells, which I think is puts it in a great way. If you're going to be a prostitute, you need to, you know, put your red light on outside your door or go stand on the corner with a short skirt on. You can't just sit inside your house waiting for clients to show up. And that's what so many people do. They create a business and then they don't connect it to anything. They don't, you know, have that energy of selling it. And it's like there's so many people I've met who have these amazing, awesome ideas and they've created something incredible and no one knows it exists. So then the next thing is like, okay, so who can I get to invite to, you know, help me connect this business to something, to sell it, to market it, et cetera. So there is some action that is required. But if you're doing what you love, it never feels like work. So it never feels like that hard work.
Right. Well, and again, you know, you can phrase it any way you want, but I think you just described hard work. You are running and gunning 10 months out of the year. That's hard work. Now, is it fun work? Yes. I think that the difference is this. Look, here's the difference. When you are working hard in something that you love to do, it renews your spirit every day. When you are working hard at something that you don't like to do, it's sucking your life out of you and you're dying slowly. That's the difference.
Yeah, that's true.
Think
about it. I got up at 4:30 a.m. this morning to come on here. So it's like, but to me, it's fun.
Yeah, you know what? And again, that's the difference. And so that is why if you do something that you love to do, eventually the money will follow. But until the money shows up, at least it's fun. It's rewarding. It's rejuvenating. And that's the difference.
Exactly.
And that's the difference between somebody who's got a life that they love and a person who is just miserable, and they come home and they kick the dog and they beat the kids, and you know, and life is not good for them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel the same way in relationship. It's like if it's not fun for you, why are you doing it?
Right.
It's like this is your life. This is not a dry run. This is it. And it's like if you're not happy with it, then change it. And the one thing that I do not like hearing, Bert, is when people say, oh, if I only had choice, if I had choice, I would do this. And it's like, I'm sorry, you have choice. Every single thing you have chosen has gotten to you where you are now. If you're in a bad relationship, you have choice. You can leave. If you're in a job that you don't like, you have choice. You can leave. If you started a business and you don't like it, you have choice. You can sell it. It's like you can close it down. You can choose something completely different. You have choice, which
right.
sort of sometimes people aggravated when I say that.
Well, and that's why I said earlier, I think courage is the thing that would help most of us out, because the person who says, I don't have choice, and then you point out to them, look at all the choices you have, what they're really, you know, they can either take action or they have to admit that I'm too afraid to change. And I find that, and I'm sure that you do too, that you find there's 90% of the people out there are too afraid to change, to give up, to start over again. You know, I'm too young, I'm too old, I'm too fat, I'm too skinny, I don't have enough money, I have too much money. Whatever the excuse is, it boils down to that they're afraid. What is your thoughts?
Yeah, no, it's true. And it's like, and also, I mean, gosh, even if the if you look at the energy of the whole entire world, I mean, the U.S. at the moment, it's like I've got quite a few friends in the U.S. and, you know, we've just been at this event in South Africa and they came home and they're like, God, what's going on in the U.S. at the moment with Trump, et cetera, is it's sort of like unstable. Everyone's not sure where they're at. And yes, I do think people get afraid to choose something different and they buy into everyone else's points of view of what's happening rather than look at, if you were creating your life, if you were creating your reality, it's like, what would you choose? And it's like, where would you like to head? What would you like to create? What would you like to generate? It's like, this is it. So what choices do you have and what choices could you make today that could change anything? And what I would suggest too is start by doing just one thing today that's outside of your comfort zone, just one thing. Because if you start doing one thing that's outside of your comfort zone, then you'll go, most of the time, you're like, wow, that was easy. It's like, and then there's something else you could choose. But head towards what you would like to create. and you'll create it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like what you said there. You know, you don't have to go crazy and change everything overnight. Just do one thing that's out of your comfort zone. Maybe, you know, it's time to close down your business. What would that look like? Start doing some research, right? Maybe it's time to sell your business. What does that look like? Start doing some research. You know, it's a little bit out of your comfort zone, but at the same time, it's not putting yourself way out there. And I want to throw this out there too, back to what you were saying. You know, this is it. This is life. The one you get, right? What's that song? I think it's called "This Is It." So, you know, and so we don't have as much time as you think we do. And on top of that, my experience, things always take longer than you anticipated. So if you think you have a business that you want to sell, if there's a change you want to make, now is the time to start seriously looking at it, because it's going to take longer than you think. You may not get as much as you want, but the life that you want, the life that you desire, the life that you love is hanging in the balance. And so I think that, you know, like you said, Simone, this is not a rehearsal. This is it. You got to just wake up and start doing stuff.
Yeah, and have a look at what you have been, you know, wishing for, I want to say. Because I hear so many people go, oh, I wish I had this, I wish I had this. Instead of waking up, I mean, say if you said, I wish I had $1 million. Then instead of actually creating it, like waking up in the morning and going, right, what do I have to do today to create that $1 million? They always wish they had something. And, you know, last year I went to Colorado skiing and it was awesome. And for 25 years, Bert, I've been talking about going heli skiing. And I seriously, in my world, I was like, I'd love to go heli skiing. And my husband, we were there, beautiful, beautiful weather. And he goes, hey, why don't we go heli skiing tomorrow? And I was like, damn, it was so confronting. I was so comfortable in saying I wanted to go heli skiing. And then I looked around, like the weather was just beautiful. And I went, sure, let's do it. And we did it. And I realized, wow, how many other things in my life am I doing that with, where I'm wishing something and saying, yes, one day I'll go, rather than actually just choosing it. So it's like, what is, you know, all your listeners out there, it's like, what are you thinking that you would like to do one day and convincing yourself that you will, but you're not choosing it. So I started to look at everywhere in my life that I was wishing for something, hoping for something to show up, rather than just going, all right, let's do it. What's it going to take to do this? You know, where do we have to go? Who do I have to speak to? Like, what do I have to change? What do I have to choose? You know, and start asking some questions. Questions are imperative to give you information. Like you said, research. And Jesus, we've got Google at the moment. It's like, you know, you can Google anything. And it's like, you know, how do I, you know, close down my company? What's the easiest way to do this? Or who would like to buy it? I mean, you might be one of those incredibly creative people out there who comes up with a zillion ideas. And there's some people out there who are not good at the ideas, but they're great at managing a business. That's what they're great at. So find someone who can do that, you know. But you need to ask questions. You need to get out there and start talking to people. Like you said, start researching and start looking at other possibilities that are available.
Yeah, I love that so very, very much. I think it's such a great idea. And I love the story about the heliskiing, you know, and there are things like that that we, how did you say it? I'm comfortable with the idea of saying that I want to go. But
yeah,
when it's time to pull the trigger, wait a minute.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've ever been heli skiing, but you know, we went actually, it was pretty, you know, the Coors beer in America?
What?
That was the mountains that we went on. Is it Coors beer in Colorado? That's probably my accent. Anyway, it's one of your beers, and it's got the picture of the mountain on it. And Coors. There's my accent for you.
Yeah.
So, but they're the mountains we skied on, which was so cool. It's so awesome. And, choosing things like that just puts you in this forefront of, like, being so present with your life, which then creates that adventure of living. And I'm not saying everyone has to go out heli-skiing, but it's like, what are you asking for that you're not choosing? Right? Start
Absolutely.
To have a look at that.
Let's take a look at it. You know, and one of my favorite affirmations, and I'm a big believer in affirmations simply because I believe we're doing it all the time. You mentioned, you know, you use the word, I wish. I wish I this, I wish I that, I wish, you know, that's an affirmation, right? And you know, some people are always saying, I'm running late, I'm always late, I'm fashionably late, and so they are always late. Or some people say, man, I can't save money to save my life, and they're always broke. And so some people call it self-talk. Some people refer to it as an incantation, chronic thinking, thinking stinking, or stinking thinking, yeah. You know, so whatever you call it, I call it affirmations. And we are programming ourselves 24/7 by the way we talk. And one of the phrases that I came up with was, fear does not stop me. It motivates me to act now. And I say this all the time. I repeat it all the time because whether you're Donald Duck or Donald Trump, you have to deal with your fears. You have to deal with making a decision that might terrify you and excite you simultaneously. You have to deal with that. Once you make that decision, there's going to be some resistance. Some of your closest, best friends, people who love you may want to talk you out of it, but fear does not stop me. It motivates me to act now or to take action. And, you know, and so I've used that to go skydiving. And the reason I went skydiving is because I have some fear, not a big fear, but you know, when I would climb a ladder, I would be very intimidated. I would have a fear of heights, and I thought, well, you know what? This is ridiculous because even if I fall off this ladder, I'm only going to fall 3 or 4 feet. Yes, you can get hurt. Yes, you can break something, but it doesn't happen that often. And so I worked on that, and I went, you know, and I thought, well, man, if I can skydive, then I can definitely climb a ladder, and that's what I did. Now, we all, like I said, whether you're Donald Duck or Donald Trump, we have to manage our fears. And back to what you and I talked about earlier, the thing that stops most of us is a lack of courage or being controlled by our fears. And you know, and so as you recounted your heli-skiing story, when we do something that scares us a little bit or a lot or whatever, then we immediately start to ask those deeper questions. What else am I afraid to do that's been holding me back, that's going to give me more juice, right? That's going to make my life better because I was willing to push myself through the fear.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, totally. And it's also, there's a great tool that we have too, which is called Who Does This Belong To? Because so many times, you know, for your thoughts, feelings, and emotions, people buy it as theirs, like the ladder, you know, like climbing the ladder and you going, hey, it's only 4 feet. If I fall, it's not going to be bad. But you have, you know, you said it intimidated you. And if you use this tool and this question of asking, who does this belong to? Because so many times people pick up the thoughts, feelings, and emotions of other people and start buying it as theirs. You know, like when you walk into a room and someone's angry or sad and you pick it up and then you start being angry and you're like, hang on a second, this isn't mine, I'm not angry. Or the same thing when you walk into a room and everyone's really happy. It's like we like buying the good stuff as ours. You know, it's like, oh yeah, that's mine, I'm always happy. But it's like the bad stuff we don't consider, you know, we buy that as well, but we sort of blame ourselves for that one, and that's when we start to go into the judgment of ourselves. So
right.
I would ask, who does this belong to for every thought, feeling, and emotion? And if it lightens up, it's not yours. And the other thing too, when you're creating something like this is, and people hate this question, but ask, what do I love about creating this? Or what do I love about not creating this? Like if someone, you know, does have no money, and it's like, okay, so what do you love about having no money? And people are like, I don't like having no money. It's like, yeah, but you've created that. So what do you love about it? And it could be, you know, I like being looked after, or, you know, if I have a bunch of money, then, and you have no idea how many people come up with the thing of saying, well, then I wouldn't know who loved me. then I wouldn't know who my friends were if I had all this money, or it's, you know, it's considered crude and rude to have that much money. They have some point of view and some judgment that they've picked up somewhere throughout their life and brought that as real, which creates them not being able to choose something greater.
I love that.
Definitely use
who
that
does this
who
belong
does this
to?
Belong to?
Mm. And what was the other one?
What do I love about, you know, having no money, or what do I love about not creating this?
What do I love about creating this? What do I love about not creating this? I like that. What do I love about creating this? And, you know, it's interesting because yesterday I was doing a training and we were talking about, you know, collapsing negative feelings and things of that nature. And I would have loved to have had this knowledge because you're right. You know, there are some people who say, well, I can't ever find somebody to go out with. All the good men are gone. Well, what do you love about creating that reality? And the answer is going to be somewhere in the realm of, well, by not going out, I don't have to worry about being hurt, right? Again, it's fear-based.
Totally. And it's like, if you're not in a relationship, guess what? You don't want to be in a relationship. That's what you've created. But people always try and come up with some blaming someone or something else rather than look at it and go, okay, I've created this, so what do I love about what I've created here? And it's like, it's because the thing is, Bert, if we could work everything out with our logical mind, we'd have everything we ever desired. But it's the insane points of view that lock you up. So there might be some insane reason and point of view that you have that you're creating this. And when you can change that, then you have way more choice. And that's essentially what I see it about too. It's like, what if you had infinite choice? What if there was infinite possibilities and you're not choosing it? You're sitting there waiting at the sideline, looking at other people having the adventure of living and going, why can't I have that? Guess what? You can.
Yeah, I love that. And we're going to end on that note. Millicent has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. For you guys who want to buy Simone's book, you can find them on Amazon. Her last name is spelled M-I-L, as in millionaire, M-I-L-A-S-A-S, A-S-A-S, M-I-L-A-S-A-S. Simone, it's been a pleasure. Looking forward to having you back again soon.
Thank you so much, Bert. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Good stuff there from Simone Millicent, and the founder and creator of Joy of Business, and a couple of best-selling books. And as you can tell, it's a joy to have her, and I love what I learned today from Simone. Looking to have her back again soon. As always, you guys are created to succeed. That's one of my favorite line, right? But now, after talking to Simone, I'm wondering if I should say, why do you enjoy creating that or not creating that? No, I'll stick with mine. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.